Remember, I told you we're going to do multiple Q&As today. I'll be the master of whatever ceremonies here. And then, so you've patiently done a great job listening with us. Now remember, strategic imperatives we covered. And again, I hope what you took away was our point about these are the areas we are going to lead the shifts in the world. I hope we clearly understand where we made investment. And you took away a unique understanding of the enterprise. The guys had a million examples about that point. So, okay, how about four? And I'll just kind of sweep across.
Katie Huberty, Morgan Stanley. A couple of questions for Martin. First on free cash flow conversion. Why is the 90% range the right number relative to history, especially given a growing software services business should spit off better free cash flow than what you're implying? And then second, I understand the revenue headwinds as you rotate into higher value segments, but gross profit dollars over the past 3 years are flat to down. When should we see gross profit dollars grow again to match the strategy that you're talking about today?
Sure, sure. In the spirit of strategic imperatives, we'll talk about that. I guess I'd say a few things. First, on free cash flow. So we did run at, again, north of 100. Now we see, going forward, longer term, we see 90s. Now, there are a few things, I think, that you have to keep in mind. Over time, as we've said before, book tax and cash tax will converge to the same number. Now, that excludes discrete items. That always excludes discrete items, and we always have discrete items. In fact, I would suspect when we close the Lenovo transaction, we'll have a discrete item. As we settle another U.S. audit, we don't expect to have a U.S. audit settled this year, but as we settle another U.S. audit, we'll have a discrete item. So over time, that book and tax rate will converge. Now, we benefited pretty dramatically from having a low cash tax rate in the last 10 years. So as they converge, that's gonna bring that down. The second thing I think you gotta keep in mind, one, we do anticipate having to invest, continuing to invest in CapEx. And in fact, this year we would expect CapEx to grow given our investments in, for instance, SoftLayer that Ginny mentioned earlier. So remember our acquisition model. Our acquisition model is to take IP and to expand it globally. And when we expand it globally, we assume we're going to have to invest to make that happen. And so we're going to invest in software. The other thing to keep in mind, so one is investments. The other thing to keep in mind is we do have globally, we have a pretty substantial pension which has to be funded. Now it's a closed pension in the U.S., but we operate outside the U.S. as well. So there's a pension impact as well. I think most importantly, from my perspective, is the 90, if we run in the 90s, is that sufficient? And in my view, running in the 90s is sufficient for us to continue to invest. It's sufficient for us to continue to grow the dividend, and it's sufficient for us to continue to pull shares out of the market. On the revenue growth, what was the revenue growth question?
Gross profit
dollars, thank you. So I think there are a couple things to keep in mind. One, and we talked about this, services gross profits growing, software growing, it really is a hardware story over the last 3 years. So when we look at gross profit declines, it's hardware. Now, we said we'd stabilize that this year. When we get to 2015, we do expect we'll grow hardware gross profits again.
Okay. How about, let me go through the middle here. Three.
Yeah, hi. Ben Reitz of Barclays. Thanks. Two quick questions. One on mainframes. You know, why is it just cyclical? If growth markets are impaired and you sell a higher share of hardware to the growth markets, it would seem that mainframe growth may actually, through the next cycle, be impaired lower than it has in the past. So I was wondering if mainframe, in the context of where growth markets are, is it really just cyclical? Then just with regard to long-term revenues, a lot of your revenue mix is shifting to BlueMix, OpenPower, and some aspects of services that could be more gradual and that could be paid more over time. So I would think that would lower revenues structurally. And I was wondering if that was the right assumption, or are these offerings all incremental and not structurally lower revenue because they're realized over time? Thanks.
Okay, so Ben, just let me make a comment on both, and Tom, if you and Martin want to add. On your latter point, which you saw, much of what you saw is incremental. When you saw Bluemix and the like, and you even listened to the team describe those kinds of applications, right? So a good piece of that, what you saw is incremental in that nature. Although when we talked about cloud, we always talked about there'll be some that's replaced, some that is lift, some that is shift, I think were the two words we used. So we're still on that track. But when you specifically, when you're asking about Bluemix and the like, I mean, Robert, you guys can speak to it. You see clients, they're using both sides of this equation. They're using both on-prem and the Bluemix together. So we do see both. So let me, you can come back and add, but let me then go to your other comment on mainframe. Remember in the growth markets, guys, and again, hardware for all of IBM, less than 15%, but the part we do is very important. But it is more than mainframe out there, too. All right, so we have the industry standard server base, which there's a good this is part of the reason why we've made the decision that we've made. And so this is not just mainframe. So Tom, you want to comment on the mainframe business out in the growth markets, but there's a vast majority of that that is non-mainframe. So
as you can imagine, in the mainframe business, it's relatively easy for us to track the customers. Yeah. There's a finite number of customers out there, although we have added some. We'll talk about that a little bit this afternoon. But it's a finite number. We can track that. And we also track from generation to generation, what are the adoption curves? How quickly are people taking up the new version, as it has been very cyclical for us. And we don't see that problem in China, to say that we've got an adoption problem in China. As Ginny said, our hardware business is vast in China, and it's made up of a lot of factors. So it's power, it's power-based, it's industry standard server-based, somewhat storage-based. So all of these factors end up contributing to that intersection of hardware and China specifically. It's not driven by mainframe.
Okay, so let's, Tony, I don't know how to call a number, but in the middle, I don't know how you guys were doing. Oh, you don't have a mic? Tony, in the middle. This Tony.
Corey, he's up here. Up
front. Oh, the mic is weaving its way, although I can hear you.
Thank you, Tony Sacconaghi from Sanford Bernstein. I appreciated the longer-term perspective on the company, the financial model. So I wanted to make two observations in that vein and get your reactions to them. So if I think back to when you started this most recent roadmap, you announced it in about 4 years ago at this Analyst Day, you thought you would grow revenues at 3% organically and acquisitions would bring it to 5%. I think through this year, revenues will be largely flat, excluding divestitures. So you're off about $20 billion relative to what you thought your revenues would have been 4 years ago. And I'm just wondering if you think about the context of how you manage the portfolio, what has played out differently? Are the mature cash generative businesses falling off more? Is the impact of acquisitions less? Is there something different? So that's the first observation. The second one that I wanted to make, which is along those lines, again, if we look over longer periods, if we look at your first five-year roadmap relative to this roadmap, in your first five-year roadmap, you had better revenue growth, and importantly, because you drive for it, much better operating profit dollar improvement than you will likely have in this roadmap, or certainly through the first 4 years. And again, it begs the question about, despite the very programmatic effort to shift the mix, despite the very programmatic growth initiatives, it feels like it's becoming more difficult to effect the model that you're talking about, at least through this roadmap relative to last roadmap. And last roadmap had the financial crisis, so arguably it had a really tough macro backdrop. So, you know, in the spirit of both those observations, I'd like to get your perspective on is there something about that model that has worked very well over the last 10 years that is becoming more difficult to execute, particularly in light of a fairly significant shortfall relative to your expectations 4 years ago, at least about how the top line would play out. Thank you.
You want me to start, Martin, and then you can fill in?
I mean, sure.
So that's just on the revenue piece. When Tony had mentioned about in the last roadmap period about there being a financial crisis that we didn't expect, I would say, you know, what we've done on these roadmaps is give several different areas, and there are always ranges of what we do. Now, within that, I would also say in this time, we didn't expect, obviously didn't plan for some of the different variability in the growth markets that would be there, as well as our hardware business, Tony. So as we've talked about both of those, I think it doesn't matter what period of time, you always have things you didn't plan for. So in both cases, I actually believe that the strength of our model is our ability to do those things. So when we talk about the year-to-year swing, even just this past year, around hardware, or when we take and handle a restructuring action, or when we take and handle a dip in a certain geographic market that's out there, and then our ability to still come out the other side. So I find that to be a strength. And so on the revenue side, the importance is, and it's always been true, right, that we continue to shift into these new areas. They do grow strongly. That's true. And then in the other parts, again, I want to keep reiterating, it's price performance. It's you add value, you do more. It doesn't mean that, you know, these things are stagnant, falling off. They've been reinvented. So I view both periods somewhat similar, with unforecasted kinds of things that happen, and then with all different sorts of opportunities we give that is arranged there, and how we come out with our solution on the other end. Not one more difficult than another.
Well, one, you know, I would point out that the original roadmap was a four-year period, not what we're currently in, which is a five. So we did it in 07 with 06 as a base, and it went through 010. This roadmap was a five-year period. Now, as you pointed out, we did go through a financial crisis. This time, we're going through this transition that we've talked about this morning, the shift to the cloud, the shift to the as-a-service world. As Ginny just said, we see some real challenges in the growth markets because of some macro issues. So, you know, I guess my view, the strength, as Ginny pointed out, the strength in the business model is our ability to react to those things, regardless of whether or not if we have a roadmap, we still have to react to and manage the business. If you asked me, well, maybe, I guess I'll say it this way. In the original four-year roadmap, what was the big surprise? We went through a global financial crisis, right? And we had to manage through that. If you asked me what it was this time, it is this sort of convergence of trends that are obviously impacting our business, which we're responding to. Some of them are having a really profound impact on our profitability, such as the shift in low-end power. That industry standard server business is having a profound impact on our profitability, and we've talked about this. So we had a global financial crisis. This time we have a series of, not a single, but a series of shifts within the industry that we're responding to.
Okay. How about two, and then we'll go to one.
Thanks. Steve Milanovich at UBS. Two questions. Martin, first, thank you for that breakdown of revenue into, well, I might call it good IBM, bad IBM. I don't think those are the words that you would use, but
definitely not.
Not at all.
New IBM, old IBM.
Good IBM, better IBM.
No, no.
All right, imperatives and core franchise. But you said regarding the core franchise business that the keys, kind of at least in the short term, probably over time, are to keep revenue flat and to continue to improve margins. And you've generally done that in those businesses. But the same things that are driving your strategic imperatives, all these, you know, convergence of things and the opportunities also work against those businesses. So at this time of dramatic change, I would think it's a somewhat optimistic assumption to think that you can sort of keep the older businesses with higher margins. So you must be depending on like productivity enhancements. Can you talk through what gives you the confidence in kind of keeping those two metrics?
I'm sure all the strategic imperative questions are going to come in the afternoon
even before Martin jumps on that. But guys, seriously, and this is why we're going to put the whole afternoon on this topic. They are not older. They are not bad. They have been reinvented in many ways, and we're going to show that to you, right? So this is why when you say, because that's a very good question. Why would you assume, right, that you could hold a growth rate on something? And when you go look what's under the cover on those, and again, I said price performance plus moving up to higher value, right? I mean, that is why clients stay with those things. It isn't that they're not staying with the same thing, right? It has been contemporized for the times in so many different ways what it does. And so that's why we're going to do all afternoon. So to address, I mean, Martin can still answer your question, but I mean, I want to be clear, that is what the afternoon is about, because I think if you just look at, you know, sort of think, oh, well, if those are the growth initiatives, well, what's everything else? It doesn't mean everything else is not contemporary and contemporized, right? So, and many of those are long-term relationships with clients. We had a big meal or a big luncheon. Well, I didn't eat that much, but I mean, a big lunch with a client yesterday here, one of the Wall Street firms that we outsource all of their work for them. And You know, it's been completely, I mean, what he's doing with that whole infrastructure is doing for him is all around mobile, security, these things. And so putting in that solid platform, it's been a 10-year relationship, right? Continues to grow. It looks entirely different, his infrastructure to support that, than it did before. So, Martin, go ahead. Now, what would you like to?
Well, no, I think that's right. The only thing,
give you a little time to add there.
The only thing I will add is I do want to thank you for saying it was an interesting portrayal because, one, we obviously worked pretty hard on it. But I do think it is an insightful look at exactly the issue which you're asking about, and we're trying to tell you this is not old, new. It is not that at all. So I'm glad it highlighted the issue a bit. And as Ginny said, in the afternoon, we're going to spend... The
team's going to go through every brand
who
you're familiar with to show you what that is inside of each.
Just the cloud team, you managed not to mention the Amazon word. Could you talk about how your products stack up against Amazon, what you hear from clients? Because you actually do hear once in a while nobody gets fired for buying Amazon. So things are changing.
Well, should we start with my team up here? Do I want to let Lance come up here? From Lance, you dying to talk, man? Come on, go ahead. We'll start with this part of it, right?
There's a mic over here, Lance. You might be able to grab that.
Oh, here, Lance, talk right into mine. I told these guys I would call on them from their seats too, right? So, Lance Crosby, founder of SoftLayer, and as I said, a great member of our team.
Okay. You know, to get a grasp on the difference between
here,
Amazon
and make Amazon. You feel at home. Sit right down. Go ahead. Yeah.
Sit right. We have to understand how we started. So our genesis, our DNA, came from enterprise and government hosting. So all of those traits and all those characteristics we brought with us when we created Cloud Computing in 2005. So we are the only company out there that has the control, the transparency, the security, the data residence, all of those things built into the platform from the ground up. All of the other competitors were built for themselves internally and then exposed to the internet. And they have been evolving, trying to bolt on things over time. And I think we all know it's hard to bolt on and become something when you didn't start that way. And so we were built for the enterprise, we were built for the government, and that's what our difference is.
And differences versus some of your competitors? And it, not just that piece of it, but pricing, flexibility, security.
Sure, and from a services standpoint, we have the ability to do bare metal, the ability to do public clouds and private clouds, and we just look at it as being a compute unit. We're saying pick the right thing for what you're trying to achieve. You can mix and match, and you can build multiple environments and manage them all from a single pane of glass, either the API or from our control panel. We built a system that literally will manage millions of physical nodes, tens of millions or hundreds of millions of virtual machines in many data centers all over the world. It's the only software in the world that will do that. And we built a global backbone in conjunction to that to connect all of those so people can move and transfer data from site to site or from cloud compute unit to cloud.
Talk a minute more about that, Lance. I don't think people understand that he's got a private global backbone behind this whole network, better than anything in the world.
Yeah, we learned early on in 2007, 2008, that the customers didn't care why it didn't work. The cloud is the network, the network is the cloud. So we had to take the World Wide Web out of it. We built our own global backbone so we could get as close to the end customer as possible. Because they expect performance. They don't care if it doesn't work on the wire or if it doesn't work at the compute node. The reality is it doesn't work, period. And so we built that, and we're the only one out there that has a global backbone. We've interconnected all the data centers, and we expect our customers to transfer data between sites and between facilities for lots of different reasons, to be globally dispersed, for disaster recovery, for active-active, active-passive, all the reasons in the world. Again, a very much an enterprise focus versus a consumer focus that you see from the competitors.
And on a pricing or a pricing benchmark, Lance?
On pricing... We want to deliver the best value.
As your banker.
We want to deliver the best value at the best price. We are not here to be the low-cost leader. That is not what we got in this game for. We are not like Amazon and Google and Azure, period. We are a different animal. We have different features, different characteristics. They cannot do what we do. We are competitively priced because we operate in the same market. But we will never be a race to the bottom type company when it comes to price.
I also thought the guys were very, you know, because of course, obviously, we watch all of this and participate in this. And, you know, our teams, as an example, when you look at, as they show me, invoices of competitors, you, very interesting. You never see every line item when somebody publishes price decreases and the like. And the piece Lance talked about that we understand well is this movement of data. Go watch what other people charge move data. Okay? So thank you, Lance. Well done. Well done, my friend. Here, just in case. So good job. All right. Now, how about over to number one over there?
Great. Thank you very much, Jim. Jenny, it's Jim Suva here from Citigroup. Thinking about your initiatives, you mentioned several times that growth markets are being challenged and it's cyclical. But it seems like there's a lot more, and you mentioned China several times, but it seems like there's a lot more than China that is really slowing down, a lot of the other growth markets also. So as other companies are not really seeing quite the challenges that IBM is, I noticed you didn't mention the word NSA or Snowden or impact from any of that. Is it simply that, is it, you think it is cyclical? And if so, then you got to have some view on when it's going to come back. Or is it more structural as some of these countries are really looking at a clean slate IT build out versus traditional build out? So if you can maybe help us understand why you think it's cyclical and not structural. Of the most of the morning was spent on structural changes of cloud and services, and importantly, if it's cyclical, you should see when it's going to come back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I wouldn't necessarily say that if you know it's cyclical, you know for sure when it's going to come back. I mean, that because as we've talked about in some of these places, Jim, that you know it is going to take time, and over some period of time, these will come. In the description that I used, and I happen to use China, but you will see some of those same, back to the point about the intersection with our hardware business, you will see that as well play out in some other markets there. And so when I spoke to good strength in Latin America, Middle East, Africa, those are big geographies as well, right, where you see a different set of things playing out. Do you see some structural? Will some countries then leapfrog? That's your point about, you know, structural. I think some will get an opportunity to make some of these leapfrog changes, which is very much why we've got, by the way, big build out of cloud in these places, in situated in the right places for the serious kind of work we do, money center, et cetera, where we know where the data has to reside, which countries and why. So they'll have that opportunity. That is an opportunity, by the way, that's profound across Africa, their ability to leapfrog in, again, anyone who thinks Africa's not one place. It's 54 countries. We've carefully picked which countries, what pace. They all move at a different rate and pace in what it is that we do. So to your question of do we have an exact date on any of these? Are they moving at different areas? A number of them have some of the same characteristics I described. To your second point about just data security and security in general, the point that you asked about there, look, I think this is important to make. We, for decades, have based our relationships with clients on trust. And well before me, the senior executives of this company, decades ago, made very important choices about the treatment of our customers' data. We do not share our data with other parties. We are not in the communications business. I'm not in a consumer business. But any data that my clients have, we do not share with another party. We don't share it with a government. They don't get access to our code. They do not have access to our encryption keys. That is not it. If the government asks, they can ask the client for permission for something, but that not through us. So, however, in this marketplace, do you see, boy, geographies around the world, domestically, would people like to use every opportunity of every piece of news they read to try to build their own domestic opportunity? Sure, that's normal commercial behavior. That anytime there's any kind of discussion about any topic, security and the like, people say, yes, this is why you should use the company that's grown here in this country. And I mean, that's very normal. We've seen that. And this is, by the way, this is why we spend a lot of time with why things like our digital trade agendas need to really, America, the U.S. needs to really be robust in its negotiation, TPA, TPAA, all of these, America, you know, digital trade is an important barrier. You don't want barriers around the world. So that sort of leads into the importance of those kinds of things. But law and law, just very clear. I mean, we have decades of trust with clients. And I am very proud, again, on the IBM company, on the position that it has always maintained in the protection of our clients' data. And any other comment on growth markets, Martin, if you want to make? Or
No, I think you got it.
Okay.
I wouldn't add anything.
With that, we are going to wrap up. And we are going to, because we have three more Q&As and a luncheon. I mean, we will have lots of time.